speaking with our favorite guest, Dr. Sir Clifford Alford, and this is our Cherokee Medicine Way show. I thought what we'd do tonight is start out with just a few of the email that has come in. And first of all, I'd like to say, hi, Clifford. Welcome. Welcome to our show. Okay, now there was a gentleman that wrote in and asked if, for me to forward this to you, which I did. He had a problem with pressure in his head. And do you want to explain a little bit about what he was talking about and a little bit more detail on that one there?
Well, sure. One of the things that happens in times like these where spiritual growth is actually becoming more rapid, and actually time is becoming more rapid. The further we get out in the universe, the faster it seems that the Earth spins, and our solar system as a whole. And so time seems to many people to be speeding up. And couple that with people who are going through time of accelerated spiritual growth, then very often there is a measure of pressure and also of fear. And the specific herb that we've mentioned before to deal with that was lecithin, which is a soy derivative. And also, he had mentioned in there about, wanted to know about the three herbs that I'd mentioned together, including lecithin. And those three herbs then were vitamin E, natural vitamin E, D alpha tocopherol vitamin E, and also flaxseed oil and the lecithin. And the way that we encourage most adults to take it, certainly the way I take it, is 800 IU of natural vitamin E per day, 3,000 milligrams of flaxseed oil, and 1,000 milligrams of lecithin. And what this does is it provides all of the omega 3, 6, and 9 oils that I need. And so, if you have a young child, like preteens, you might want to cut the amount in half. But other than that, let them go ahead and take the full dose. I mean, it won't hurt them.
Okay. And speaking about lobelia, our friend Jenny stopped in. She finally got her lobelia that you recommended from the health food store. And so she stopped by and she said, well, Mary, would you like to test it? So we took our 5 drops, put it under the tongue, and finished it off with 10 drops in water. Boy, does that work good.
Yeah, it does.
I couldn't believe it. And so I even gave some to my son, because sometimes he gets a little stressed too. So I thought, I'll give it a shot. So he showed up and I says, try this. He said, well, that won't work on me. And I says, well, it doesn't hurt to try. And mellowed him right out too. He went downstairs and took a nap.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so... Junie contacted us, or June, and she suffers from fibromyalgia, and she had listened to the show, and so she had sent in something also thanking you for doing that particular show, and we haven't heard back from her yet to see if she's gotten what you had suggested. I think she had a little question for you, though, about exactly how much of a dosage she was supposed to be taking, and what herbs they were again.
Yeah, and what I sent back to her was about using mullein and sheep's sorrel and lobelia. My encouragement to people is get what's known as a muslin reusable tea bag, which is basically a bag about the size of what people used to get tobacco in. And you fill a half full of mullein, half full of sheep sorrel, or if you can't get sheep sorrel, any kind of other sorrel. And boil you some water, and she was asking how long to cook it. Now that's something that we kind of need to cover, is you do not cook herbs. You boil the water, you take it off the heat, and when it is no longer boiling, and I suggest that people do it at about a gallon at a time with this, is that you drop in your reusable tea bag that's crammed full of mullein and sheep's oil, and you let it, stay there, with a lid on and stuff for a good while. My preference is that people put it in, let it sit for around 5 or 10 minutes, kind of stir it around a little bit, kind of get it to start coming out a little more, put the lid back on and leave it until the thing's cool.
Uh-huh.
That makes a really good concentrated dust. Now, you can do it for about 10 minutes if you just need something fast. But it's a whole lot better to let it go through the process of cooling and stuff. And then you take that bag out and you wring it out real good and get all the tea out of it that you can. Empty out your leftover mullein and sheep's oil in the garden. It makes good compost and stuff. And, add you about... if you get a drink that that batch and stuff, then drink about 4 cups a day and add about 8 or 10 drops of lobelia to it each time that you drink it. And if you're going to do the tea for a bath, then you do basically the same thing, only you add about 10 drops to the gallon as a whole and dump that into your hot bath that you're going to soak in. And so that's really the best way to do it. You don't need a whole lot of lobelia when you're doing something like this because you simply want the lobelia to enhance the other herbs and make them work better. Yeah. And it also tends to speed them to where they need to go in the body. It helps out in a couple of ways besides doing its usual stuff.
Okay, and another question that arose, and that was... Coral was going to take some of that lobelia for her fibromyalgia, but thank you. I have a problem with that word. There's another word I cannot for the life of me pronounce. Brett always has a great time with me over it, but anyhow, what it was concerning was on the lobelia. There's some things on the back of it that says not to take if you have high blood pressure. What do you think about that? Is it safe to take with high blood pressure? Or?
Yeah, I'd say that's about the most unfounded claim that I've heard as far as actually being on a bottle of lobelia. It will not increase your blood pressure.
Oh, okay.
It does what's best for you.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you do have high blood pressure, a really good thing to do is, we want to drink a lot of water.
Take what?
A lot of water.
Oh, okay.
Thins the blood, and also a real good thing to start doing now that warmer weather is just around the corner is drinking sassafras tea.
Uh-huh.
Because sassafras tea thins the blood, and it helps you be cooler also. And because of it, in Oklahoma, when winter would come around, I'd go out along a couple of the creeks and stuff and find one of the spice bushes and eat a couple of spice bush leaves because that would thicken my blood for the winter and I'd be able to stand in the cold better. But just as soon as it started warming up, I'd be doing some sassafras tea to thin my blood out so that I could enjoy it and eat better.
Well, that must be the reason so many people down south like sassafras.
Yeah. Well, besides the fact that it just plain tastes good.
Yeah.
It tastes really good. And sassafras, there's so much of it growing around Tahlequah that it's almost considered to be almost like a noxious weed, except it's a tree. It comes up from seeds and it comes up from the roots of the larger trees and stuff, so it's just all over the place.
Oh.
But, when it comes to high blood pressure and stuff, those are good things to do. Eating things like shiitake mushrooms are real good and stuff. Broccoli and Brussels sprouts. I mean, you can eat broccoli and keep the Bush family away. That's not too bad. Broccoli and Brussels sprouts and cabbage and cauliflower are real good as far as helping out. And, if you have, good access to, cantaloupes and mushmelon and things of that nature, then those are a good thing to eat, too.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
When you go through this little diet process and stuff, it's going to help a lot. And if you use the lobelia with the sassafras, it'll make it work even better, because that's what it does. Lobelia will not harm you. Another thing, too, that with people with high blood pressure is sometimes it's caused by too rapid of a heartbeat. And so a real good thing to do would be what we talked about that the old MDs used to do, and our medicine people still do with an emergency, is you give them a dose of Lobelia, wait 5 minutes, and give them a good stiff dose of cayenne, and wait 5 minutes and another dose of Lobelia.
Uh-huh.
And the thing with cayenne is that it regulates the heart. If it's going too fast, it'll slow it down. If it's too slow, it'll speed it up. If it's erratic, it'll smooth it out. It restores elasticity to your veins and arteries and so forth, and it cleans out deposits from them and stuff. It's just a great thing to take. But my best advice to people is you take it as a tincture, not as a tincture and extract, and not as a capsule with powder in it. Because if you do it with the powder, when it hits your stomach, it's just going to have this slow burn there until it finally all absorbs.
Well, how do you do a tincture?
Well, you take as much of the tincture as you can stand, and certainly my favorite, and got an address around here, a phone number rather than find it, for Dr. Christopher's Herbal Formulist, and they make bar none the best cayenne in the country. And let's see, it's 800-453-1406, and you ask for a guy named DJ, and DJ will fix you right up. The thing that they have is what they call Dr. Christopher's Special Edition Cayenne, and it says on the bottle, take one drop, and they are not kidding.
Uh-huh.
Now, I can do some really, really hot cayenne because I've been doing it all my life. But when it comes to their stuff, the most that I'll take is about 5 drops.
Uh-huh.
Most people, 1 drop would just about put them under the table. So don't put it straight in your mouth. I have a friend named Louis Montes in Tulsa. Haven't seen him in a few years, but Louis was a real card and cut up and stuff. He was also the one who taught me both Yusui and Karuna Reiki. And Louis was over at the house one day with his girlfriend, and he and she and my wife and I were having lunch, and I had this tincture of cayenne out there that was about half as strong as Dr. Christopher's. And Louis goes, well, I'll take some of that. So I'll put some of that on my tongue. I'm Louis, you don't want to do that, just put in some water and drink it. And he says, well, you Green Berets are just a bunch of sissies. I'm a Marine Scout sniper. I'll show you how it's done. He says, okay, hot shot. Handed him the bottle. And he shot about half a drop full under his tongue, and his face turned red. He started to sweat. His eyes about bugged out of his head, and he drank everything on the table and started stuffing bread under his tongue and stuff. It was too late, and he was blistered by it. So, the thing is, don't take this stuff straight.
Now,
put it in something. Put it in a little food. Put it in some water, whatever.
Now, I don't know how true this is, but I have to ask you. I had read someplace that if a person is having a heart attack, if you give them cayenne, you can stop that heart attack. Is there any truth to that?
Yes, there is. I'll cover a different things you can do for a heart attack. Number one, the cayenne, especially Dr. Christopher's again, that special edition cayenne, you can shoot a dropper full into, under the tongue, and that's about 30 to 35 drops, okay? Dropper full under the tongue, or dropper full in each cheek, and massage their cheeks. Their face will turn beet red, and it will jumpstart their heart, and it's known as the liquid defibrillator. It does work. They may hate you for bringing them back to life that way, because when they go to the bathroom, they're going to have this afterburner effect that you just won't believe. They may also have some blistering in their mouth and stuff, but they'll be alive. There are other things you can do, of course, like, CPR, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, but you got to be careful where you do it. If you do it anywhere in this country, it's okay. You go over to Asia and you do it, and they will put you in prison for trying to kill the person before they're dead.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, what they do is there's a muscle called the perineum. Some people call it the peroneus longa, and it's located on a man in between the scrotum and the anus, and on a woman between the vagina and the anus, and it's about a 16th of an inch wide. And on the front of it is what's known as conception vessel 1 and acupuncture and acupressure, and on the back of it is what's known as governing vessel 1, and this is the primary energy point that focuses all the energy of the body. In China, if somebody has a heart attack, what they'll do is they'll reach under their dress or up, between the legs, and they'll stick their thumb right at the point of the perineum, and they'll push it in to where it's going up into the pubic synthesis area and the pelvis, to where it's about a knuckle in, about an inch in, and then they'll pop it out real quick, and that jump starts the heart. And it doesn't break ribs and all this sort of stuff, like our CPR does.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so there's different things that you can do that are nice and natural and stuff. And we got to learn this about a little over 1,000 years ago when there was a Chinese warlord who sent out some ocean-going junks to do some trading around Asia. And one of them got blown off course in a cyclone and got blown up for days before they finally got out of the storm. And they sailed on and on and on, didn't know where they were lost. And finally they got to this island, and the people at this island were just really friendly. And so they went in and traded with them the stuff that they had, the silks and jade and things of that nature that these people had seen before, and got all these furs and different types of dried meats and stuff that they'd never seen before, and bunches of stuff just to survive on. And they found their way home. And everyone was thrilled to see them because they thought they were dead. I mean, they'd been gone for months.
Yeah.
And so this warlord got a small fleet together and had them take him back to this island. And when they got there, he landed 327 people, about half soldiers, a bunch of traders, And as the Chinese do, people that did acupuncture and acupressure, and herbologists, and philosophers who would take care of them from a medicinal standpoint, and told them, go and explore the other side of the island and don't come back until you have. And they never came back because the island was California.
Really?
Yeah, it had this nice big ridge of mountains in the middle and stuff. And so they sent them to explore the other side. Well, about 3.5 years later, there were only 18 of them left, and they'd made it over to what's now North Carolina, and they intermarried with the Cherokee people. And we've had a system of acupressure and stuff ever since then.
Huh.
And, it's funny.
I always learned so much from you.
And so using governing vessel 1 and conception vessel 1 is a great way to restart the heart. If you don't want to do it that way and you're afraid of doing CPR or something and you're worried that maybe the person has AIDS or something like that, you never can tell in this world nowadays, then use the cayenne. It'll work.
Yeah, that's what I had heard. And it actually came from a doctor. He says he'd never lost a patient, from it, even after the heart had stopped,
Yeah.
That he could pull them back.
Yeah, it'll do it in a hurry. Right.
Yeah.
They'll never forget the experience, but it'll certainly do it in a hurry.
Well, that's good to know. That's really good to know. Now, there was a email that came in, and I sent it to you, and it's going to, and what it did is it's going to kick off our show tonight on diabetes, right? That's what you want to talk about, is the diabetes?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a pretty interesting little email. It said that this lady knew that there was lots of diabetes in Native America, and man, is she ever right. And surely, we had something for that. Well, when I was running my clinic in Tahlequah, there were just tons of people who had diabetes, and it didn't take a whole lot to figure out why. When when our people were first removed to Oklahoma, one of the things that happened is when they got there, they had two things waiting for them. They had, you know, a bunch of missionaries and Indian agents, and they had the United States Cavalry. And they were not allowed to hunt in the way that our folks used to, and in fact were forced into some sort of farming arrangement on soil that was totally unfit to farm on. And basically they wound up getting most of their food through the Indian agents, who stole most of the good stuff and then gave what was left to the native peoples in the area. And so they wound up eating lots of starch for the first time, and if they got meat at all, then it was usually a little on the rotten side and very fatty, and was not the lean meat that they were used to from the venison and stuff in the Smoky Mountains of North Carolina and down into Georgia and Tennessee and stuff. And so, they went from a very lean protein and vegetarian diet to one that was almost all starch. And it just chewed them up. And today now, just about anywhere you go, either there or, over here, if you're going through the Mescalero Reservation and stuff, then you see all these places to get Indian fry bread.
Yeah.
And basically that is white flour that's made into a dough and deep fat fried, usually in bacon grease and stuff. And it's extremely bad for you.
Oh, but so good.
Oh, yeah,
so
it tastes wonderful. I do it every once in a while, but I don't make it a habit of it. I can feel the pounds coming on with each bite.
Oh, yeah.
But, we've had lots of people with diabetes, and usually type 2 diabetes that starts, in your late teens and into adulthood. And then we've gotten where we're having more and more people who are born with type 1 diabetes, which is the childhood version. Now, I came up with a program because of it to deal with that. And, wrote out, a document on it and stuff, and it's a pretty hefty little bunch of information. And made it a point to provide it to people who came to my clinic and stuff who had diabetes. And it got to me where people from other places were calling or writing and saying, how can we get a hold of that? Because what we had happen is if someone had type 2 diabetes, then within 6 to 18 months, they were over it.
Really?
And, the people with type 1 diabetes, it tends to take around 5 years or so for them to get over it, if they can. Now, only about, 80 to 85% of the people, 80 to 90% of the people who have type 1 diabetes are able to get over it, and the others just don't, but their lives can still improve a whole lot if they use the program. And so with the, with the type 2 diabetics, for instance, we had one of the ministers that had so much fun slandering me around Tahlequah for a while before he got run off, had a wife who was just been diagnosed as a type 2 diabetic, and she was told she was going to have to take insulin for the rest of her life. And, that just, there are some MDs who just, are tickled half to death when that happens. I know one in Oklahoma who was one of the few honest MDs I ever met, so I'm not going to say his name. And he told me honestly, he said, Clifford, we're glad that you have this little program of yours and that it works so well, but said, a whole bunch of my buddies are going to be irritated with you. And I said, why? People are getting over it. And he said, it goes like this, we all have our best intentions and stuff, but it's really expensive being a medical doctor nowadays, both with malpractice insurance and everything else under the sun. And he said, not to be too facetious, but I've got friends who, when someone comes in and they find out they're a type 2 diabetic, then they tell them how sorry they are and tell them how they're going to have to work on managing their program and stuff, and they'll help them find an endocrinologist to work with somewhere close and all this sort of thing. And then they go into their office and get down on their knees and say, thank you, God, because, man, they have got an insurance cash cow. to help pay their insurance and their staffs and all this sort of stuff. And you know, the pharmaceuticals that they sell are not inexpensive for them, just like they're not inexpensive for the patients. The only ones who really make a ton of money off of pharmaceuticals are pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
So that was the thing. And sure enough, in the process of using this, we would have people who, you know, doctors who would call to, "You interfered with my patient." It's like, no, which patient is that? Well, so-and-so. Oh, you mean they got well. Oh, yeah, that's interfering, sure. And you know, they'd get incensed and make all kinds of threats and stuff and go away and leave me alone. Because who wants to take someone to court who's going to call the witness that is the star of the show who's suing and say, "Oh, yeah, I did this diet program and I got well."
Yeah, really? Good point.
So here's the thing with it. You know, basically, if someone's a type 2 diabetic or even a type 1, they need to have a really strict what's known as a lacto-vegetarian, low-calorie, alkaline diet. And this is a diet that's low in fats and calories and really high in fiber and complex carbohydrates. And it also should be primarily vegetarian in the case, especially of the type 2s, as excessive overeating of not only sugar and refined carbohydrates led to the problem, but also eating lots of, heavy, fatty meats and stuff. And so, you know, there are all kinds of ways to get your proteins from vegetable sources, at least until you get over the disease, and then you can go back to eating other stuff again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, if you have a choice between taking insulin and having the likelihood of going blind early and losing your legs to poor circulation and all this sort of stuff before it's over with.
I've had friends that suffered from that.
Yeah, so basically you can suck it up and deal with the diet for 6 to 18 months, you know, and as compared to that. Now, when it comes to vegetable proteins and stuff, getting more proteins and less carbohydrates, one of the things that I really encourage people who are diabetic to do is to take brown rice and put about a teaspoon of either rice bran oil or olive oil in a pan, and just kind of smear it around in there lightly, and then take the brown rice and dump it in there and parch it. Basically, you just turn it on to a good high heat, and you start stirring it with a spatula immediately, because if you don't, it'll burn.
Yeah.
And when it gets to where it's just a little bit more brown throughout, take it off the heat, put it in another container and or something, and put it in the refrigerator. You know, and what's happened with this stuff is in the process of browning, it's changed the molecular structure so that when you eat it, your body is going to recognize it as a protein instead of a starch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes all the difference in the world. So you put it in the refrigerator, and when you're ready to use it, you use the same amount of water as you would, but it'll take about half the time to cook it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's just a real good thing to do. And the you can also do things like whole grains such as buckwheat or millet or oats, and rolled oats are okay, but the whole grains absolutely are the best. These are natural, unrefined, and slow digesting carbohydrates, and that's what you need. It's like you need to have the fiber that's still there in the husk and stuff. Now, my grandmother had a saying about bread. So the whiter the bread, the sooner you're dead. And it was not a racial thing at all, okay?
Uh-huh.
You know, it was simply that it didn't have the fiber in it. All it had was the garbage left in the middle, because they'd taken all the fiber out that makes something a brown bread.
Yeah.
And if you're going to eat brown bread and stuff like that, then look at the ingredients. And if it says processed flour, don't eat it, because that's white flour.
Uh-huh.
And if it has stuff like caramel coloring to color that processed flour, that is actually an ingredient that was invented by the Coca-Cola Bottling Company years ago. And they actually patented it under its true form. The caramel coloring is what gives Coca-Cola and stuff like that its brown color. And they've got this, $1 million word for you know, for what the stuff is, and you know, I can't pronounce it to save my life, but they're a camel culling. When they patented it, they did it as its true self, as an immune system depressor.
Really?
It's bad enough that sugar is an immune system depressor. Processed sugar will shut your immune system down for about 6 hours.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but when you do the, you know, the sodas that have the caramel coloring, or bread with caramel coloring, or candy with caramel coloring, or anything with caramel coloring, then you've got this really potent bunch of mess that's going to tear your lymphatic system and your immune system in general and do it.
Oh, that's something good for people that have AIDS to know, too.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Do not drink colored sodas. You know, if it has caramel coloring in it, or anything with caramel coloring, just don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's going to really hurt you. Now, the, you know, so when you do the stuff and you do have the fiber, have all the fiber and stuff in it, then what it does is it causes things to digest slower. Therefore, you have less sugar buildup and stuff. It also lowers LDL cholesterol and triglyceride values, which also tends to promote safe and natural weight loss and can more rapidly lead to the end of insulin therapy as a way of life. So it's a, you know, it's a good thing to do. Now, there's an MD, you know, to give credit to MDs where it's due, there's an MD in Florida named Arthur Agatston. And Dr. Agatston came up with a diet to help cardiac patients. He's a cardiologist. And he knew that the American Heart Association diet was just a crock, and so did everybody he worked with. And so he came up with this diet to make people have, you know, healthier hearts and blood and all this sort of stuff. And it had an amazing result on the, you know, on the person's weight, because it caused them to lose weight primarily around the stomach and then throughout the rest of the body, which is, makes it a pretty neat diet. It's called the South Beach Diet. And so if someone is a diabetic, and I tell them right up front, look, you need to get Arthur Agatston's books on the South Beach Diet, and you need to read them and get to know how they work and get all the stuff as far as what's available for the diets. And you need to do phase one, you know, which is truthfully the hardest part of the diet, for about you know, about 6 weeks. Now, in his book, he'll tell you to do it for 2 weeks and move on to phase two. Mm-hmm. If you're a diabetic, don't move on to phase two, because you start adding sugar and you start adding other carbohydrates and stuff. Just do the phase one for 6 weeks. Now, the reason for it is especially in people who are hypoglycemic or in type 2 diabetics, is they have what's known as an insulin reaction syndrome, where they will eat some food, usually something that's got sweets and stuff in it that they will absolutely crave, and their blood sugar will spike, and then you get all this insulin and stuff to try and take care of it, whether you're giving it to yourself with a pump, or you're taking a shot, or you know, or you don't quite need to be on insulin yet, so your body's dumping what it has into the bloodstream, and then you go from this high, you know, spike on the sugar down to a low where you just crash and have no energy, and you've got to have something else again.
Uh-huh.
So you do the phase one, because it'll take about 2 weeks for a normal person and a little bit longer for diabetics to reset their insulin reaction to know, so that, number one, they will not crave these things anymore. It takes about a week and you stop craving stuff. Lobelia will help with that too. But, you know, number two, is it's going to get you to where your insulin sugar reaction kind of settles out. And both he and the program that I came up with before recommends some things like, you don't have, you know, huge meals 3 times a day, which is what got a lot of type 2s in trouble anyway. You have anywhere from 4 to 6 small meals a day. Now, after you get past doing, you know, like, you know, the South Beach diet for about 6 weeks and stuff, and and you've really dropped a lot of weight, you've gotten your energy back and all that sort of stuff, then you can start adding other things like, fruits and things of that nature. But in the meantime, stick to, fresh, raw, or lightly steamed vegetables and stuff, which are which are alkaline in their makeup as compared to foods that have been boiled and stuff, which A, have all the nutrients cooked out into the water and or killed, and B, are very acidic and therefore bad for you. The more alkaline your body is, the healthier it is. So
okay.
That's a good way to look at it. And then, once they get to the point they're past this a bit, and they can start eating, the raw fruits and things of that nature that have natural sugars, as fructose, which are really high in energy but require no insulin for the body to be able to use it. And, another advantage of raw fruits and vegetables is that they naturally stimulate the pancreas and promote greater insulin production, And so at least 80% of their diet should be raw as compared to 20% steamed. And also, the more you steam something, the more you break down the fiber.
Uh-huh.
So the more raw it is, then, again, the better it's going to be for you. Some other recommended foods and stuff are things like Jerusalem artichokes. Now, Jerusalem artichoke grows with a stalk and stuff that's very similar to a sunflower. If you ever plant some in your yard, if you're down here in the desert, it doesn't matter, it won't grow. But if you're in some place like Oklahoma, or any place that's got real dirt, not just sand, you plant that stuff in your garden or whatever, you better plant it in an area where you don't mind it taking over, because it will. We had people who would go out around the Tahlequah area and stuff and plant some because in 2 or 3 years they'd have this great fence, that nothing would get through and would give them lots of privacy, be around, 7-8 feet tall, and give them all the privacy they ever wanted, but then it would take over their land.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd have to keep, working it back. And the best way to work it back is you dig up the stuff in the area where you don't want it to be, and you get the roots out, and you clean it off real good, and you eat it raw. And it tastes marvelous.
Really?
Yes. Oh, it is so good. And it is so high in insulin, it's just not even funny. Now, another thing that's real good along that line and stuff is string beans. In fact, when, if someone is a diabetic, then my encouragement to you is get you a dehydrator and get ready, because as soon as string beans start coming out of the market, you need to be splitting those suckers open. You do not want to try and dry them just by cutting them up, because they'll mold.
Uh-huh.
But you split them in two and break them up, and you dry all of it you can. You eat all of it that you can during the summer and stuff. In the winter, you make you a tea out of it. And do you about 4 cups of tea a day? Because string beans, bar none, have more insulin than just about anything else except one thing. Jerusalem artichoke is close to it, but probably the best going is what's known as nophelitis, or prickly pear. You take a prickly pear cactus, burn the spines off of it, peel it, and slice up the insides of where it looks kind of like French cut green beans and stuff. And just very lightly steam it or put in a little warm water and stuff and eat it. It tastes great, and it is absolutely loaded with insulin. Doing that sort of thing, then things like grapefruits, are real good for you. Cucumbers, milk and milk products in general are generally good. All the garlic that you can eat and all the onions that you can eat, just the more the merrier. Now, one thing that happens with people, garlic is fairly high in insulin on its own. But the primary thing with garlic and onions is that they have a broad-spectrum antibiotic called allicin that you cannot cook out. Most things, you cook it, you kill it. But with garlic and onions, it'll still be there. And so you eat all that you can in your food, because one of the things that diabetics are real subject to is getting infections and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, it's a good way to avoid it. You know, other things that are real good, you know, things like yogurt, and, you know, kefir cheese, you know, all soy products are good. Nuts, they're raw nuts. If you have roasted nuts, then they're rancid. They're acidic. They're not good for you. You have raw nuts. Avocados are great. They have fats that are good for you, and they're also extremely high in vitamin E. Brewer's yeast is real good for you. Eggs, you know, all the eggs you want to eat, just go for it. You know, all mushrooms are high in chromium, but, you know, shiitake mushrooms are the best, and then things like, you know, shiitake and maitake and portobello mushrooms are really the best. You know, so, you know, chromium helps you deal with, you know, kind of increases your metabolism a little bit, but it also is real good for dealing with, you know, insulin and sugar in the blood. We had a great time around Tahlequah, you know, as far as the creeks and stuff there, because watercress grew everywhere, and it's just a really good thing for diabetics to eat. And also leaf lettuce. And when it comes to lettuce, though, here's one thing that people need to be aware of, and that's do not eat iceberg lettuce.
Really?
Yeah. Iceberg lettuce is probably one of the worst things that you could ever possibly eat. It's certainly one of the worst things that you can grow. Texas A&M University did some research on iceberg lettuce that I had the opportunity to read about a while back, where they planted a whole section with nothing but iceberg lettuce. And then they built up the soil and everything before they did it, just like any other farmer would. And they took the iceberg lettuce that grew and they tested it, and it had no nutritional value whatsoever.
Huh.
And then they went and plowed in, you know, all the stuff in the fields and tested the soil, and there was no nutritional value in the soil either.
Oh, really? It neutralized the soil?
Yeah. Yeah, it took the nutrients out of the soil and put nothing back. Now, the thing with iceberg lettuce is that it's not really a lettuce. It's a thistle. And the only part of a thistle, of any thistle that's ever good for you, is, in the case of iceberg lettuce, it's just not, are the roots and rootstocks, and that's it. You know, but the iceberg lettuce is just worthless. And it has another problem, too. Now, you can cut it up, break it up and stuff, but when you chew it, then what happens is you break away the fiber, and there's sort of a mesh netting of a fiber inside of it that kind of balls up. And when you swallow it, that goes down, gets in your small intestines and the villi, the little fingers and stuff that try to extract nutrients out of stuff, kind of spread it out. It gets into the colon, which is real slick and has nothing like that to kind of move stuff along. And it starts to trap things. And, you know, whether it's fruits or vegetables or meats or whatever, then it's going to either rot or mold or ferment. And you have a problem. So your colon can't get rid of it because it's too slick to be caught by the walls of the colon and moved on. Therefore, it starts dumping the stuff into your blood and stuff. And next thing you know, you have something like chronic bowel syndrome.
Uh-huh.
Ever hear of that?
Yeah.
Chronic bowel syndrome, whenever the MDs have something that they call a syndrome, it means they don't know what causes it.
Uh-huh.
Well, what you have to do if you have something like this is, A, you stop eating the iceberg lettuce fast, and B, you get someone who knows how to do a colon massage to do it to you a couple times a week for a while to kind of get it retrained and get stuff to move along.
My father-in-law has that. He picked it up. He was a prisoner of war from the Battle of the Bulge. And okay. Because of the diet or whatever, or lack of food, period, he ended up with it. You know, it showed up years later, but...
Yeah, and so he's fighting the battle of a different kind of bulge.
Yeah.
And, it's a simple thing, basically. You start having these raw and steamed vegetables and stuff, and eating lots of the leafy lettuces, like butter lettuce or leaf lettuce, whatever stuff, you know, just, you know, real lettuce, not the iceberg stuff. And so that'll make all the difference in the world for you, too. Now, you also, when we talked about drinking, more water and stuff. Let's say you weigh 240 pounds. Now, hopefully you don't, but, you know, I do. So, then I need to drink 240 ounces of water a day.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people who will say, oh, I can't do that. You know, man, I'll drown. But you're going to feel like it for about 28 days, one moon cycle. And then your body's going to realize that you're going to keep on giving it to it, and it's going to be able to clean out at a, you know, at a slower rate, and therefore your need to urinate so much will drop way off.
Uh-huh.
So just stick it out for 28 days. You know, I had to go to the bathroom a lot, but that's okay.
Now, coffee doesn't count.
Coffee definitely doesn't count. Nothing with caffeine counts. Fruit juices don't count. Nothing. In fact, fruit juices are just really plain bad for you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they don't have the fiber in them. If you get orange juice or something like that, you get it with the pulp still in it, it's good for you. If you get it without the pulp in it, it's bad for you. It's all sugar. Yeah, so you got to have that fiber and stuff. Now, when it comes to other things and what not to eat, sauerkraut's real good for you. It's very alkalining for the body and stuff. But then also things like cucumbers, because they actually contain a hormone that's needed by the cells in the pancreas, which enable them to produce insulin. So cucumbers are good. another thing that helps a lot is encourage virtually anyone to have an eighth of a teaspoon of a day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can have more, that's fine, but have at least an eighth of a teaspoon. You're going to need to put it in something because cinnamon by itself is extremely bitter.
Uh-huh.
But I tell you, fix your little cocoa and stir it in. Fix your little coffee and stir it in, whatever. Whatever you're going to do, put it in something, put it in a little oatmeal. Preferably not the instant oatmeal, the kind that you actually have to cook, because that's stuff that's good for you. The instant isn't.
Yeah.
You put your cinnamon in your oatmeal and heat it and stuff, because what cinnamon does is it causes the body to use both insulin and its sugars and stuff, its glucose and whatnot, in better, more efficient ways. So, cinnamon is absolutely great. When you feel like, if you can limit yourself as far as meats and things, it's not something that you just absolutely crave, then try and limit yourself to stuff like broiled fish and seafoods and organ meats such as beef tongue or liver or kidney, and eat absolutely no pork whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
There is no such thing as alkaline pork. Now, when it comes to non-organic beef and stuff, for example, the more rare it is when you eat it, the more alkaline it is. And if you get past medium, like medium well or well done and stuff,
uh-huh.
then it's just so acidic that you may as well not have it. But with pork, it doesn't matter what its condition or how you cook it and stuff, it's going to be acidic.
Uh-huh.
Pigs do not sweat. All their impurities and stuff stay in their body.
Yeah,
so, and, fish, basically, you should only eat infrequently if you can, because the oils they contain are really kind of part of the pancreas. However, there's some things that are starting to grow right now, big wild foods and stuff that are absolutely great for diabetics. The one that's starting to grow right now the most is dandelion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, a real good thing to do is eat your raw leaf every morning and evening, which is a really excellent source of vegetables and stuff, and make you a good tonic to have about once a week out of roots, which is great for the liver overall and for cleansing the blood. And the flowers are really good to eat, too. I mean, they taste good, you do the spring greens now, and you do your two dandelion leaves a day, all the way through the summer into the fall when they stop growing. And you want to start now because they're just a little bit bitter right now. They taste pretty good right now. But if you wait until midsummer or late summer and try and do it, it's going to be so bitter you're not going to be able to stand.
Yeah. My mom used to make dandelion greens all the time.
Yeah. And another thing that's real good are dock leaves. You know, whether it's burdock or smooth dock or yellow or curly dock, whichever you kind of call it, broadleaf dock, you know. All of the dock leaves are really great sources of vitamins and minerals and are excellent blood purifiers as well. And, in fact, yellow dock or curly dock, whichever you care to call it, contains more vitamins and minerals than virtually any other plant in this hemisphere. You know, whether it's in North or South America.
Yeah, and I remember people telling us to stay away from burdocks because if you eat the seeds or something like that, they were poisonous. But
no.
Later on, we found out that if you made a tea out of it, like if you had boils or something like in the inside of your stomach, it would purify it, or, you know, it would purify the blood where it can clean you out.
Yeah, and also the seeds are, you know, if you make it, if you dry it and make tea from it, it's great for anything in your head, you know, with the brain and stuff. The leaves and stuff overall are real good for anything inside the body.
Mm-hmm.
Itself, the roots are real good with burdock as far as cleansing, you know, problems in the legs and edema and things of that nature.
Oh.
And, you know, burdock roots just, you know, are an absolutely magnificent food. Just take them and peel them, and you can either eat them raw or steamed, you know, and it's great. And the dock seeds, when they get to where they're this rich cordovan brown, and they're fully matured and stuff, and you can just kind of shuck them off into your hands, you collect all of them that you possibly can. You know, when I was living around Tahlequah, I'd fill around, 8-10 Walmart bags, you know, full of them and hang them up in the rafters and stuff to save. And I'd use them in porridges and stuff, and you can grind them into flour, and they have this really rich, nutty flavor to them. And they're great to add, you know, to your whole wheat flour and stuff as far as flavoring and stuff, and to vastly increase, you know, the vitamin content, vitamin and mineral content overall. So, you know, those are good things. Mullein leaves, we talked about for the fibromyalgia and stuff, makes an excellent tea. It causes the lungs to take in more oxygen. You know, the sheep's oil, again, or, you know, it's great in salads, you know, and alone, or as a tea. You know, and causes the blood and tissues to hold more oxygen, which diabetics need. Cayenne peppers and garlic and wild onions cleanse the veins and arteries of plaque and cholesterol and fatty deposits and help to restore elasticity overall to the damaged blood vessels and things and stimulate circulation, which diabetics have a problem with. If you get wild onions and stuff, you know, it's real good to take the greens and chop them up and cook them in your scrambled eggs and stuff like that. It's just, you know, a wonderful, tasty treat that the Cherokees look forward to every year. And, you know, and it's also real good for you. Sweet violet flowers, you know, and leaves, you know, and all types of clover flowers and leaves are really great in salads, and they're excellent detoxifiers also. In fact, that's an absolutely wonderful thing for someone to do if they're having problems with cancer.
Uh-huh.
You know, the sweet violet leaves and the clover leaves and flowers and things. Mimosa leaves and cattail pollen are both rich sources of protein, so there are a lot of people with mimosa trees and stuff. And mimosas are good for other things, too, like you take the fresh flowers, make what's known as a fresh plant tincture and something like grain alcohol, which has very low water in it, actually. Then that's essentially what we know as liquid Prozac.
Really?
Yeah, it works real well. And bilberries and huckleberries make a real excellent jam and are a major source of insulin and stuff also. And they're also an excellent source of you know, purple dye, so you got to be kind of careful when you're using them to stain yourself and your clothes and stuff. But they're also real good as far as your improving your night vision. Now, you do not want to offer bilberry jam or something like that to a World War II veteran who was in the Air Force and served in Europe. Because when they were on the boat going over, they were given these two big quart jars of bilberry jam, and they had a certain amount that they had to eat every day and show to their executive officer, they would be court-martialed.
Huh.
And so when they got to Europe, they thought they were finally through with the stuff, and they found out they were going to be eating it for the rest of the war because it makes them see better when they're flying at night.
Huh.
Yeah, so I've got some I had some great uncles and stuff who passed on now who were pilots during World War II, and you mentioned bilberries to them, and they'd be likely to beat you half to death. but anybody else, is really great for them. And certainly when it comes to diabetics and stuff, then, they have major problems with their eyes and things. So all of the stuff with this diet is really good.
Now, there's not a chance of overdosing on insulin, is there, with eating all this?
No, you're not going to have a problem. The body will just store it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it'll just take as much as it wants and then just flushes out the rest of it.
And then the rest of it will be held in the pancreas. Other things that are real good to take every day are things like GTF chromium or chromium picolinate, or if you can find it, chromium nicotinate, which is actually better. And you take around 2 milligrams a day for around 6 months, and then 200 micrograms 3 times daily for a year. And that that will really help as far as the metabolism overall and providing some energy and things. And most people who follow everything that we've been talking about, for 6 to 18 months, if they're a type 2, we'll be over it. And some type 1 diabetics will find that they have, a phenomenal change and whatnot. So a real good thing to do when you're doing this stuff is to go to your doctor, your endocrinologist, and say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And most likely they're going to say, I don't recommend that. And what you say then is, look, you work for me. This is what I'm going to do. You're going to help me monitor it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not willing to do this, I'm going to fire you and get somebody else.
Uh-huh.
You see, MDs are not God. Just like I'm not God, you're not God, nobody else is God except God.
Yeah.
And because they're just humans, and they're in a service profession, that means they are there to serve you. So you can do some dictating. You tell them, I'm going to do this, and you're going to have to help me monitor, my insulin levels and how to regulate the insulin that I'm taking and stuff so that I don't take too much. Because if you take too much pharmaceutical insulin, you can have a problem.
Okay.
So you go to your endocrinologist and you tell them, look, this is what I'm going to do, and this is what I'm going to need from you. And if they balk, just remind them. They work for you. You don't work for them.
Okay, so when they're a diabetic, would be still taking the insulin shots?
Yeah, and they'll need to regulate it because it'll get to where they need less and less.
Okay.
So that's where the thing is. You go to the chronologist and tell them, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to give this a try, and you're going to help me with it. There may be a crisis here and there and stuff, but that's what the endocrinologist is for, and they get you through it.
Okay.
Yeah. So there'll be other things too that are good for people to take, like good B complex and stuff. They can take around 25 micrograms of B12 and around 500 milligrams of pantothenic acid, around 250 milligrams of niacin, and around 30 to 50 milligrams of zinc. And it's real good. Take around 50 to 100 milligrams of B6. All of these things work real well, and a real good way to get that. Actually, it's just to find your good B-complex, and it'll have most of that in it.
Uh-huh.
So take it. If you can take around 3 to 5 tablets of bone meal a day, that's about the best defense that you can get for osteoporosis and diabetics.
Oh, okay.
Because bone is an organ. It's like we talked about Dr. Royal Lee before. The stuff that he found is you eat something from another animal or something, then it goes to that part of your body.
Uh-huh.
Potassium is good. It provides the electrolytes that are needed for good health overall. If you do around 300 milligrams, potassium is good.
Oh, what about bananas?
Well, bananas are really not the best thing to do. Bananas are more sugar than anything else.
Okay, because they always say to eat bananas for potassium.
True? The best thing to eat for potassium is kiwi.
Oh, okay.
Just cut the ends of the kiwi off and then eat it with the fur on, so to speak, the skin on.
Uh-huh.
And, it doesn't taste bad or anything. It takes a little bit getting used to it if you're used to peeling it and stuff. but it's extremely high in all of the electrolytes, not just potassium.
Okay.
And then, you know, kelp, if you could do around a teaspoonful of granules or around 3 tablets a day, it's a great colloidal source for iodine, which diabetics need. If you take, a capsule or a tablet of manganese and bromelain, you know, about 3 times a day, that helps prevent inflammation overall, which is a problem that often comes about from poor circulation in diabetics.
Uh-huh.
Around 1 to 3,000 milligrams daily of vitamin C, according to personal tolerance, you know, helps the body deal with stress overall. And by according to your personal tolerance, it's where you start to have loose bowels and you back off a little bit.
Uh-huh.
You know, glutamine, if you can do around 500 milligrams daily, you know, that's good too. We're going to talk about something here in just a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about some things as far as, other things basically that are high in insulin and whatnot. But there's a real threat to all of these things, and we'll touch on that in just a minute. Some other things that are really high in insulin, things like juniper berries. And you can do about 5 juniper berries a day without any problem. They're great for your digestion overall, but you don't want to do more than that. Periwinkle is good. We touched on dandelion root and stuff. Comfrey root is high in insulin, and the FDA screams like mad about that, but they just need to get over themselves. So is licorice root, but you got to be careful about licorice root because it's also high in estrogen. And if you have a man who eats too much licorice root, he starts having a problem. He gets kind of emotional and starts growing breasts. So. Be careful, guys. Alfalfa is good if you're not allergic to it. And raspberry leaves. Raspberry leaves support the pancreas and are really good for all female problems, period. In fact, just about any time a woman comes to me and says, I have so-and-so problem, then we go through the process of getting rid of parasites and worms and stuff, and she's on raspberry leaves until the problem's over. And I encourage her to have raspberry leaf tea every day anyway, because it's just so good for women in general. And there's a little thing that came from India a while back that was real hopeful. It's called Gymnema sylvester. And it's a G-Y-M-N-E-M-A, and then sylvester, S-Y-L-V-E-S-T-R-E. And it helps repair damage overall to the kidneys and liver and pancreas. And we thought, for a long time, this is a good little support and stuff. But then we found out something through a guy named Dr. David Williams, who puts out a little newsletter called Alternatives. If you're into natural healing and stuff, Alternatives is probably the best little monthly magazine that you'll ever get your hands on. If you want to know who David Williams is and what he's like, do you ever see the... You ever see the movie, Medicine Maker, like Sean Connery goes and hangs out up in the trees and stuff in some tropical forest?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, it's people like David Williams that inspired that movie. Because he goes all over the world, he hangs out in the rainforest, and sometimes up in the rainforest, and sometimes out in the Australian outback, and funny places in the tundra and the Arctic and stuff. I mean, the guy just goes all over the world and researches cures, natural cures that he's heard of, and brings back that information. Oh. And one of the things that he brought back information on was research that had been done on Gymnema sylvester all over the place that proves that not only does it help support the pancreas and stuff, but it actually helps rebuild the epithelial cells which line the pancreas. And if someone feels like they just can't do anything but take this little pill a few times a day, like 3 times a day, then that in itself eventually will rebuild the pancreas to where it'll start to work properly again.
Really?
It'll take a long time.
Mm.
If you do it with all this other stuff, it'll do it a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, it's a wonderful thing. One of the things also that we came up with as far as this pamphlet is as far as body work and stuff. And, you know, there are basically four things that I recommend for people who are diabetics. And one is Reiki. Any kind of Reiki will do. A good basic therapeutic massage. You do Reiki 1 week and massage 1 week. Do acupressure, acupuncture the next week, and reflexology the next. And I've got a pretty good list of acupressure, acupuncture points for diabetes mellitus, or type 2 diabetes, or adult onset diabetes, whichever you care to call it. And then some points that you can add to it for type 1 diabetes. And this is stuff that, you know, our people have used for years. It's worked. And that a number of other people have used, like in the Chinese and Korean traditions and stuff. And we have found that, you know, these are just kind of basic for someone to do as far as acupressure or acupuncture. And if they'll do this, or get someone who can do it to them, because you can't do it yourself, really, and, you know, they're willing to put out that little bit of expense and go through these different therapies every week, with, you know, the Reiki, the therapeutic massage, the acupressure, acupuncture, and reflexology, just, you know, 1 week after the other, then that's going to, you know, vastly improve, you know, the speed of their recovery as well. And what will happen with a good acupressurist or acupuncturist, though, is as they're going along and they're working these points and things, then they will realize that there is, you know, a next point for you, or something for any given you know, meridian, and that they'll just feel naturally drawn to, and so they'll wind up making a notation of that, and they'll do it every time, and that will refine the process for the person who's receiving it. So that's you know, that's an important thing, is that you have someone who's skilled in it and who's not afraid to use their intuition when it comes to the points that you should use, or if you should ignore some of these points. So you need to, it's like any other healthcare provider, which is, you know, MDs are healthcare providers. People who do natural stuff are healthcare providers and whatnot. And you simply go to them and you talk with them. You know, and how do you feel about this, and what do you think about that? And basically, you interview them. They might make you pay to do it, but you interview them to find out if you're going to work with them or not. And it doesn't hurt to ask them about their spiritual life and how they feel about intuition and things of that nature.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, that'll help out a lot. You know, I used to know a gentleman back in Oklahoma by the name of Dr. Paul Beck. And Dr. Beck's a naturopath and whatnot. And basically, he didn't learn much in his naturopathy degree. You know, Paul Beck is probably one of the best reflexologists that you'll ever meet, period. And the stuff that he learned along with that is where, you know, you'll find the best stuff from him. And one of the things that he did is he came up with a thing called the Master Cleanser. And, you know, there are a lot of people who are either hypoglycemic or borderline diabetic. And if they'll do this, they won't have to worry about being anything worse, because, you know, it'll get them over it and stuff. We have that information available for people. But then, you know, there's... I've never recommended that a full-blown diabetic do the Master Cleanser.
No.
Excuse me, Paul has, and he says it works, you know, and I have no reason to doubt his word on that. But, you know, I've just personally never had. Dr. Groves in Tulsa has a blood sugar normalization diet that anyone who thinks they're becoming diabetic, or even who is diabetic, would do well to, you know, get from him. And, you know, it will work wonders as far as normalizing your blood sugars and stuff. It takes about 2 weeks to do it. And so there's all kinds of hope out there for people who are either diabetic or are borderline diabetic. If you're diabetic and you feel like you got to have something sweet, then here are a few recommendations for you. Swiss Miss makes a cocoa mix that is sweetened with Splenda. Splenda is probably the best sweetener a diabetic can use.
Okay.
And it has no glycemic quality to it whatsoever. It is made from sugar, but it has no glycemic quality to it, and therefore it doesn't, you know, cause you problems.
Uh-huh.
If you want to use something like stevia leaf, you can do that. Stevia leaf tends to leave a little bit of an aftertaste. However, it is absolutely great for your skin.
Uh-huh.
In fact, that was what it was first brought into this country for, as a supplement for the skin. We'll talk a little bit about, you know, just briefly about a threat that's coming up as far as all of these herbs are concerned.
Uh-huh.
There are a lot of people who think that the United States is governed by the Constitution of the United States, and it's not. It's governed by the Articles of Confederation, which were written before the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the tenets of the Articles of Confederation is that all treaties supersede the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't know that. So anytime the Congress certifies or ratifies a treaty with someone, then it automatically takes is higher than the Constitution. And the one that we're facing trouble with right now is one with the European Union that is causing us to basically have a little thing called Codex Alimentarius rammed down our throats. And if they succeed in doing that because of equalizing trade both in Europe and the United States and all this sort of thing, then all these herbs and vitamins and minerals that we've been talking about are going to become prescription items that you will only get them from MDs.
Yeah.
Like, fat chance.
Yeah, well, you know, they've been trying that for years now.
Yeah, but now they've got the treaty.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so with the treaty, it's not a matter of wishful thinking on someone's part that they can get Codex and turn it all over to the MDs and stuff. It's more like when it happens, not if it happens.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, if you can buy this stuff and grow it in your yard, do it. If you can find it growing in the woods around somewhere, now's the time to locate it.
Uh-huh.
If you can buy stuff and stock up on it, make tinctures or vinegars and stuff with it, that'll last for years and years, do it.
Well, that means then they're going to be using like DNR and some of those people like that to go out and spray these so that they're no longer available out in the woods as well.
Yeah.
Or try to anyhow.
Yeah.
Well, that's too bad. Well, it was just a matter of time. I mean, they've been trying to figure something out for the last 20 years, how to get the herbs off the market.
Yeah, so that's, and another thing to do right now, if you're an American who's listening to this, is harass your senators and congressmen and your state representatives and all this sort of stuff. Just harass them unmercifully about how you want to be able to have, have everything that you're used to having.
Yeah.
And that they need to either get out of this treaty or get the EU folks to give up on pushing that one.
Yeah. Well, we don't have too much of a chance of anything happening for us as long as Bush is in there.
Well,
it seems like he doesn't listen too much to anybody, whether it be Congress.
This isn't a Bush thing. This is a Senate and House of Representatives thing.
Oh, okay.
And some state legislatures have actually been doing stuff and saying that, we don't care if you ratify this treaty or not, states' rights come before federal rights, and you can shove it.
Uh-huh.
So working on it in the state level and stuff is a good thing, too.
Oh, okay.
And well, anybody who's in the European Union who's listening to this, if you get rid of Codex and stuff, then you can still have standardization in your herbs and all this sort of thing, but you can get them for less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such is life.
Yeah.
But, now, if people want to get a hold of you, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, they can write to D-R-A-L-F-O-R-D, that's Dr. Alford, at earthlink.net. And, you know, if they're not recognized, if they're not already recognized in my email, which some people have had problems with, then they will be blocked. But they will have an option. If they go to the bottom of that message, there will be an option for them to ask to be added to my address book, and I'll be happy to do that. And all they have to do is put something about, you know, mentioning the, you know, the Cherokee Medicine Way Mondays, or doing you know, a question on herbs or something like that, and I'll have no problem with accepting them as long as my virus blocker doesn't say they have a virus.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a couple of people contact us saying that they couldn't get through to you, and that was the reason for it. And I tried to explain it to them, and then I just forwarded it to you, and then you contacted them.
So. Yeah, and that's certainly a way to, you know, they can forward it through you, and then I can send it back to you, and you can share the information with everybody.
Now, starting next week, for you listeners, you'll be able to actually call in and talk to Dr. Alford, because we were hoping that we'd be able to do it this week, but I have to get a few things worked out with the telephone company first, and which should be probably taken care of by Monday. So anyhow, for all of you that I know have been trying to call in tonight, I apologize for that, because I know that on the website that I did say that you'd be able to call in, but you know, certain things happen, and I just wasn't able to do it. I tried. But anyhow, you can still continue to ask your questions on this show by just either emailing me or Clifford here, and we will make sure that these questions are brought up on our show, as well as answered through a return email to you. And then also, let's see, like Clifford said, you can go to nasinc.org to find out more about Clifford. And also, we've got links right there on our site, too, that you can just click on at burlingtonnews.net to get more information. And we do these shows every Monday, so if there's a certain subject you want us to talk about, contact us, and we'd be more than happy to discuss it. And anything that you have to add, Clifford?
Not a thing.
Not a thing, huh? All right, then we'll see you or talk to you again next Monday. Okay. And do you know what you're going to be speaking on next Monday, or is it still kind of off?
No, I'm certain something will come up during the week, and we'll deal with it.
All righty.